Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview the 18th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Singapore Grand Prix. To do this, I am joined once again by my able co-host, Mr. Timo Albus Daly. How are you?
Feeling very able, thank you, Mr. Billington. How about yourself?
I'm feeling all kinds of magical feelings. I got off a flight back from Prague at about midday today, so sort of part of my mind is still in the beautiful city over in the Czech Republic. I've been working through the afternoon on my usual day job, and I'm currently liaising with my friend who's got my MG on his rolling road in the workshop, and has just sent me through the power charts showing the peak figures, and it's looking healthy. I've built a successful engine, so it's all very
good. We'll see how long this one lasts.
This one should last a while. I promise I won't drive it through a river. So I'm doing well. Importantly, we have a guest. We have an additional co-host returning, Leah Halsey. Leah, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I've had a bit of a more relaxed day than my week been at uni and things. But doing really well, thank you. Getting ready to head up to Cheshire at the weekend for the superbikes. But feeling good, thank you, and excited to be back on.
Alton Park, isn't it, I think, for that one?
Yeah.
Should be a very good round indeed. It's all starting to get very fizzy because they've got their finale at Brands Hatch in a few weeks as well, haven't they?
Yeah, this is the penultimate round, so it's getting to crunch time. So it'll be a really exciting few weeks for BSB.
Very fun stuff. If you don't follow Two Wheel Stuff, Lee is the person to go through. Anyway, we'll kick off as we always do with some news. And well, the big news that broke after Baku is that, well, Formula 3 has had a lot happen. We'll get to more of that in due course. We'll kick off with the fact that there is now €1 million prize pot coming that series way. Essentially from next season, the top five will receive 300,000, 250,000, 200,000, 150,000 and €100,000, ranking from first through to fifth. The prize does require the driver to then move up and race in Formula 2, so it is a bit of a financial incentive, sort of the opposite of parachute money that you get in the Football Association League here, where when you move down, they give you a bit of cash to soften the blow. This is sort of the other way, is they don't try and sort of shuffle you upwards. They give you some money to help.
Which feels more like the right way to do it in terms of, here, you've worked hard, here's the reward for it, as opposed to, you've maybe not worked hard enough, here's some money for it to make you feel better about yourself.
Yeah, I've never understood the parachute payments, but this makes a hell of a lot more sense. And given the amount of times that we see drivers sort of get stuck when it comes to the feeder series rungs, when it comes to finance and the money, when they're especially the talented drivers that have really put themselves to the front, I think that's nice. This spans down to 50.
That's the bit that's frustrated you and I particularly the most from F3 to F2, is seeing drivers that have made the step up. And obviously sometimes it works out all right and you go, okay, Formula 3 really didn't see you for whatever reason, F2 definitely your jam. But it's frustrating when you see that initially and you go, someone from like 18th place suddenly makes it into F2 and gets over someone who finished fourth, and you're going, how have you made this decision? And no, don't immediately say bags of money. But I'm all kind of for it. Like you say, hard work is rewarded, prioritizes the results. And it's interesting that it's €1 million, because Indy Next have a very similar thing whereby the champion each year gets $1 million to help them move up to IndyCar. But that's one driver gets the full lot. This is then obviously spread between the five. It's interesting to see how the different things will potentially work.
Yeah.
No, I'm really excited to hear about this. Obviously, it's a massive financial game for everyone in the feeder series. So I think this, no, I'm two ways about it, because I do sort of see the parachute side of it, where like maybe because of a lack of finances, you can't get in the better teams. It might not be a lack of talent. It might be you just generally can't afford it. So sometimes I do see the perspective for the backwards way of doing it. But I think this way, hopefully it'll push people into F2 more, and then they can keep that there, because we've seen so many talented drivers, you know, get through the ranks and then can't make the next step because they can't keep the, you know, the money, they can't keep the sponsors and things like that because they can't afford their seat. So I think it's a really positive thing for Formula 3 in particular.
I'm hoping as well, conspiracy theory just that you'll like, when Abby Pulling does get the call up for Formula 3, if there is trouble for people like herself who have historically struggled to get the support behind them financially, that helps them get into F2. And because everything should be equal, more or less, in machinery-wise and team setups, yada, 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 then at least you can go, well, talent is all there, and that should then hopefully speak for itself to get any further up the ladder.
Yeah, annoyingly, you beat me to the punch with that one. I think seeing sort of Formula One Academy starting to churn out some drivers, pushing them out into all these other series as they start to refocus towards Formula 3, females getting sponsorship in motorsport has always been notoriously tricky. For some reason, no one goes for it, despite the fact that this team and I've sort of discussed many a time before. You can be the one sponsoring the lady driver, the one that's going to get all the spotlight because
If
they
you
are.
want to be really like kind of money oriented about it and go for that, it's like, yeah, it's still obvious to do, and it's mad that people don't, but we should not digress. We have a lot of news to get through.
It's a good step. We like to see it happening. Speaking of other good news, Romain Grosjean has returned to Haas. Admittedly, it was just for testing a previous car run at Mugello. Ferrari were out as well. I think there was a number of teams actually running at this session. But this was Haas used the opportunity to put Romain in the VF23, a chassis he never ran in, interestingly. And it'll be his first time in a Formula One car since that crash in 2020. Still no word, though, on if Toto will follow through on his promise to let him have a go in a Mercedes. We'll see.
Toto seems to be the only one who's forgotten about that. Everyone else has very much remembered it, and is somehow it's the word's not gone back to him yet.
But nicely enough, it gave Romain the chance to wear his F1 helmet that his kids had designed for him to wear in what should have been his last race at Abu Dhabi that season. So it finally got to go out, finally got to drive in anger and sort of actually be his helmet properly. Depressingly, if you're a Haas fan, you're also now the only team in the current ground effect era to not score a podium. So in the current
Sorry, Henry.
regulations, not looking great. However, James Hinchcliffe joined in on the action, and we'll see that as a VT ahead of the US Grand Prix. So something we'll probably remember to cycle back to when we get to Texas.
Also worth noting that he had a massive accident as well himself during Indy 500 practice back in 2015, and was very nearly dead or dead for a little bit before coming back. So it's nice to kind of all the people to then do that VT with Grosjean you've got going. Yeah, I've been in a very similar boat to you, and it's kind of almost my crash was worse than your crash kind of
Didn't he
fun
almost
banter that could be had
lose
between them.
an arm or a leg, I think, as well? It was
No, he had a axle rod went through his leg, and that was why he was in such a precarious position.
This is my favorite news to come out of any racing last week. I went to the, I'm not sure if it's still running, the F1 exhibition when it was in London at the Excel Centre, and saw that chassis, and it was right at
Not
the
much
very,
left of it, is there?
no, it was right at the very end, and you kind of turn a corner and it's just like really cleverly lit. And it was like the most haunting thing I've ever seen in my life. And to that was like one of the first races I ever watched, really, when I got was getting into motorsport. I remember it. I think I watched George do his Mercedes run, and then this, they were kind of around the similar time in that 2020 season. And then I was like, oh my God, is this what F1's like every week? Do they have these massive crashes? Obviously, we've not seen one, touch wood, of the like since. But no, seeing that that in display was, yeah, if, well, people who didn't manage to get to it was like really striking. So I love to see that he got to have another go at it. Did quite well, I think, and the helmet's a nice touch as well. It's a special moment for him and his family for sure. Do you
It's
think it was ambitious for them to choose Mugello of all the locations, though, considering the carnage that we had at that Grand Prix in 2020, and then you put Grosjean there as well, considering some of his track history outside of his obvious last accident? You go, you're really tempting fate a little bit there, but luckily nothing happened for either of them there around that track.
I remember how Grosjean did at Mugello when it was the F1 Grand Prix there. Let's have a quick flick back, 2020 Tuscan Grand Prix. I have a sneaking suspicion it wasn't great for him. Made it into Q2, but Romain Grosjean, oh no, he finished 12th, stayed out of all the chaos. It was his, the other Haas, Kevin Magnussen, out on lap 5 with collision damage. But yeah, if you do want to go, the F1 exhibition is still touring at the moment. It's in Oberhausen at the moment, opens on 22nd of October, and there is already a wait list for tickets for when it reaches Melbourne as well. So very popular and worth going to because, yeah, it's haunting when you see the chassis because it's still sort of ashen white from where it had been on fire and covered in fire extinguishers. It sort of looks ghostly in its essence. But we'll move on from that to Formula 2 and Formula 3 and the 2026 driver announcements, which they seem to have obviously just gotten bored in the gap between Baku and Singapore and just decided to get this mostly out of the way. So Emerson Fittipaldi Jr. and Kian Shields will race for AIX in Formula 2. Martinez Stenshorn will be racing for Rodin Motorsports. Elsewhere on the grid, Alex Dunn and McLaren have parted ways with immediate effect. There is word that he might be heading to the Red Bull pool, and we could see him in a Toro Rosso from next season. More on that at a different point in time. Max Esterson, having left Formula 2, will now be racing in IMSA at Petit Le Mans. Not that anyone, maybe Max Esterson fans cares. Maybe there is enough of them to warrant mentioning this, but Petit Le Mans is always great, or is it Petit Le Mans or Lone Star? I can't remember. There's Petit Le Mans that's coming up, and it's always a good series of racing. Elsewhere in Formula 3, Matteo Di Palo is racing for Trident next season. Noah Stromstedt will be staying with the team. Jesse Calasquero will compete for VAR. Go on, top name choice there. Hiyu Yamakoshi will be joining VAR. Also, Brunel Del Pino completes the team's lineup for 2026. This follows Ivan Dominguez's departure from the outfit. Brando Bedoa switches to Rodin Motorsport. Christian Ho moves over as well. Theophile Nyle joins Campos for 2026, along with Ernesto Riviera and Ugo Ugochukwu. And Jin Nakamura joins high-tech TGR as the first of an all-new lineup, including Michael Shin. Enzo Delaney will race for Prema, and Tuukka Tapanen will move to MP Motorsport. I think that covers it all off in one quick hit.
As of time of recording, crucially.
Yes, there will almost certainly be more probably happening now.
I think of all of those names, Emerson Fittipaldi Jr. is obviously of interest because it's yet another Fittipaldi and another junior. So just interesting straight away to see what's going to happen with him. And then Hiyu Yamakoshi is the other one that it's interesting for me. Steady career so far. But not up to the same level as the likes of Ho and G in terms of people who've come across from Asia. So I'll be interested to see how the difference in levels maybe translate over. But also interesting, a lot more drivers flocking over from Asia in general now, next year after a few came over this year. And we've talked about before, we're surprised we don't see more of that usually. And floodgates have now maybe started opening, which I'm all for because I'd like to see the Japanese have a great kind of feeder series of their own going over there. And I always wonder why we kind of see Zach O'Sullivan and Liam Lawson going over there, but we don't see much coming the other way. So that'll be interesting. And as I said earlier, I'm still very much now waiting for the Abbey pulling Formula 3 announcement. There's no real excuse not to do it.
Yeah, because Jin Nakamura has been in Fracker. He's been on the podium in Spielberg. He's currently 11th, so having a fairly sort of interesting season when it comes to that sort of thing.
In
Michael.
comparison to the other two, where they're champions of one races and this sort of thing, it's a different level. But
Yeah.
again, like we were saying earlier, with drivers that go from F3 to F2, that doesn't necessarily mean much of anything, depending on how suddenly flexible or the car just suits you better than previous ones you've driven.
Yeah.
My favorite news, not to be biased, is the Alex Dunn news, literally happened today, which I don't know about you guys because I might just be blindsided, but I was a bit like shocked almost. But with the news of him maybe going to that Red Bull, getting drawn in by a seat, maybe, I mean, we know how strong McLaren have been. Maybe they want to keep that driver line for as long as they can, especially with how they're performing. But I was shocked that, I don't know, it depends if you want to, it depends how desperate you are to get into F1 and how quickly, because obviously he's had a very good campaign in F2, was looking like he could win it, he still can, but, yeah, that was the news I was most shocked by this week. I think the driver moves and the people coming in. But I like the Super Formula news because I'm a fan of that. And they took Zach O'Sullivan away
Such a
from
great championship, that Super
I
Formula.
know.
It's the commentary as well is off the chain with how nuts and how quick speed he goes at it as well. But yeah, I kind of agree. Jess and I were talking about it earlier, the Dunn news. We were trying to, a bit of a head scratcher because McLaren offered him quite a lot of good stuff. I mean, he's been out in FP1 a couple of times this season. There was essentially, well, he's not going to do it now, but an IndyCar test in the offing. They've obviously got endurance racing links, so if he had to wait a season or two to get in, at least he wasn't going to be out of a seat somewhere for the time being. And timing's everything, and unfortunately he was a year too late to come immediately into it. And I think desperate maybe is the right word to use if you're looking at Red Bull or Racing Bulls for an option for next year. Is yeah, there's a seat there, but how long you've got it is, well, even not necessarily up to you. And interestingly, the two drivers behind him in the championship, and not by too much, are two Red Bull juniors who would also quite like that seat. And I think you need to finish in the top five to get enough super license points in F2, usually to get into F1, I think, even with the FP1 sessions. And he's just in P5 at the moment, and two rounds are left in the season this year. So that's going to be very touch and go. Can you imagine? After all of that, and he misses out to one of the other two or someone else entirely. But very kind of head scratching because McLaren, you're thinking that seems like a pretty steady home to be in. Where should I go? Oh, Red Bull. That seems like a good idea. No one's ever complained about anything to do with them. So, yeah, head scratcher on that one. I think depending where it goes will determine whether or not you think it's good or bad news moving forward.
Yeah, I think with it being Red Bull though, they seem to have turned things around, and Max Verstappen has been sort of very open about talking about the fact that it's this sort of new family style sort of open discussions, a genuinely better place to be. So maybe positively thinking for the Milton Keynes outfit, they've decided to actually start sort of behaving like a modern Formula One team, and that might have been what allured Alex Dunning. But at the same time, McLaren are so locked out with exactly what they've got when it comes to Formula One. You look at what they're doing in other series, they're sort of fairly rigid in the driver lineups they've got there. The only real gap would be that WEC series when it opens up for them.
Oh,
But
IndyCar as well. They've got at least one seat that is in the offing there with how performance has been this year. And I'm also thinking, if you're one of the other Red Bull Juniors and this new guy comes along, and let's say you finish ahead of him and they still put him in, that's going to great. And that whole nice, happy family vibe immediately goes out the window. Then they'll go, oh, how are you basing that?
yeah, I think also sponsorship money, as always, is going to be the thing that plays a
Well, yeah.
large part
I
in
try
it.
not to go immediately for the obvious with that one because it frustrates me so, but.
Yeah, but speaking of Red Bull, it did emerge today that Christian Horner had approached Haas to see if there are any job opportunities there. It seems that they rebuffed him fairly quickly. So good news if you're a Haas supporter, you don't have to deal with that. Speaking of feeder series, before we jump into the F1 Academy news, there is also an interesting bit that's come out of the FIA when it comes to karting as well. They've released a new spec bumper for the FIA karting series, which is intended to stop karts getting airborne, essentially. Front wheel goes onto rear wheel, kart goes through the air. It's just a sort of small overrider bumper. But again, it's one of those sort of small things you never think about the impact and importance of the FIA when it comes to safety. And I think when it happens, it's worth giving it a little mention. But moving into F1 Academy news, and Eva Agnostiadis will miss the Singapore round due to injury and be replaced by Megan Bruce. Hello Kitty, meanwhile, teams up with the outfit for F1 Academy's season finale in Las Vegas with an ace range of merch. Lisa Billard will be the wildcard entry this weekend, supported by Gatorade, and she'll feature a special livery to commemorate the brand's 60th anniversary. She competed in the recent rookie test too. Elsewhere, Nina Gaidman is heading off to Saudi F4 alongside her F1 Academy for the rest of the season.
No, nice. Megan Bruce, obviously a GB4 competitor. She's, only got a short. She's got a short amount of racing experience than perhaps some of the other drivers on the grid. But she got P3 in her third ever qualifying session in a Caterham, the Caterham Academy, back in 2023. So I think that's a good shout, and it's good to. I love, and they did that rookie test as well, not too long ago. Obviously maybe a bit biased being a woman in the motor racing scene, but yeah, it seems like a lot of really positive news coming out of the world of F1 Academy at the moment. It's a lot of optimism for the young female drivers coming through that pack, and that you're starting to churn out the Abby Pullings and the Dorian Pans and the role models that maybe I'm not that I ever want to be a racer myself, but that I lacked as a young woman interested in racing. So a lot of positive news coming out of F1 Academy. Very happy with it. But I'm going to keep a key eye on Megan this weekend. I think she could do really well.
Unfortunately, she finished in the top four for both test sessions that you were mentioning earlier back in Spain, the start of September, I want to say. So that's a nice bit of positive momentum there. But also interesting to see that Lisa got chosen out of all the other rookies as well. Because I do wonder then how do they go about choosing the metrics? Because they're saying they're measuring them on a whole range of different kind of topics and like this, not just going to be performance on track, it's going to be this, that, and the other. So obviously they're not going to tell us, but it would be interesting to find out how they did that. The only kind of bad bit of news there is Ava's not going to race because she's P15 overall, and you kind of want to take every opportunity you can to score a few points. And if it's a crazy round like it was last time, then you want to take advantage of that, and she can't, unfortunately.
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out. And obviously there's some overarching news for Singapore as well we'll get to later.
I just looked up a bit about Lisa, and she actually grew up racing at the same karting track in Normandy as Esteban Ocon. So obviously he's been very vocal supporting that entry, but it's nice to. I always like seeing the Formula One drivers interacting with the F1 Academy drivers. Sometimes you feel it can be a bit disjointed. Obviously, we've seen Lewis supporting Dorian back when he was with Mercedes. But so yeah, that's a little fun fact for the Esteban Ocon fans that they've known each other for many years, and they grew up on the same karting tracks, and he's very proud of her, which I like.
Yeah, George and Dorian, and I know Bottas does a bit of work with coaching with Dorian as well. So it's always nice to see the F1 teams actually taking their associated driver and sort of doing something with them. But yeah, Esteban, he put a nice tweet. He probably did it on the other social medias as well today, sort of speaking about sort of racing against Lisa. Obviously, she's also one of the youngest wild cards or
She's
drivers.
15 or something, I think.
Yeah, so she will have been sort of emerging onto the scene as sort of a fetus at the point that Esteban Ocon was sort of graduating out of karts at that point. But again, it's
I'd
nice to
love to see the height difference.
the height difference would be comical, but also the fact that Esteban sort of has spotted that and gone, "Ooh, interesting, a name I remember." And it was sort of going to be sort of we're going to see that sort of cross series investment, and we see a bit of that when you get the drivers in Formula 2 and Formula 3 move up at different rates, and the same again when the Formula 2 guys make it to F1, they still keep an eye on what's going on in that series below because their mates are still there, the people they sort of grew up with are still there, and you're reminded that this is sort of one big traveling circus family that at the end of the day. Elsewhere in the broader motorsport world, Mick Schumacher will be testing for IndyCar. The Formula 2 champion will be testing with Rahal Letterman-Lanigan Racing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Again, we haven't heard much out of Mick for a little while, so it'll be interesting to see what steps he makes with his career moving forward.
Yeah, it's his first foray back into single-seater racing as well, so I would quite like it to go well for him. He would be potentially, I mean, the bar is, I will say it, low for one driver in particular that he could replace, and Devin DiFrancesco at that team. So I've got my fingers crossed. And he'd have a decent couple of teammates with him in Graham Rahal and Louis Foster. Louis Foster being obviously the Indy Next champion from last year and then going off into IndyCar main this year. So be a fun little midfield team to have, and there's been a couple of other drivers that have been getting IndyCar tests with other teams as well, and it's that bit of the off season now where testing is done. And Mick Schumacher's, I mean, all of them, to be fair, have been names where I haven't expected to hear any of them be brought up in conversation. So all the even wild predictions that I make have now had to go slightly out the window. I've had to go even more left field for some of them now that people like Mick Schumacher into the equation go, okay, anyone's fair game. Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was with Alpine for WEC for a while as well. And of course, Alpine enjoyed a win at in Japan,
Fuji.
Fuji. Yeah, with ironically, it was a French 1-2 with Peugeot also claiming their highest finishing result with was one of the Porsche cars behind them. There's a, I did see, I think it's WEC memes on Twitter had a brilliant joke about the Maginot line, which is great if you love your World War II history. Otherwise, some slightly sadder news is obviously that Roscoe Hamilton passed away recently as well. The poor fella came down with pneumonia, ended up going into a coma, and then sadly passed away. So naturally, our thoughts and prayers do go out to Lewis Hamilton, obviously his family as well, who would have loved and cared for that dog. And it's worth, if we want to think about an impact that Roscoe had, bear in mind before Roscoe and Coco, Lewis's other dog, Bernie Eccleston had a strict no dogs or pets in the paddock policy, which was repealed, and both Roscoe and Coco had lifetime paddock passes made for them as Bernie Eccleston repealed that law. So he did have a better lasting impact, and now we still see the likes of Charles' dog. We see occasionally Pierre's dog appearing in the paddock as well. So it's a far happier place because of him. Let's think of it that positively. When it comes to more important news with regards to motorsports, Pietro Fittipaldi has joined Cadillac. He's the latest driver to join their roster in some kind of reserve testing sim driver role alongside Simon Pagenaud. I think they've also got a sim racer somewhere in the mix as well, who'll be doing a lot of their simulator work. And it's just interesting to see the names they're building out their sort of fleet of drivers with. And Simon Pagenaud, a great IndyCar racer, great when it comes to ovals, street circuits. Again, a slightly different sort of aspect and sort of thought process that they're bringing to the team. Same when it comes with Pietro Fittipaldi, who's done various different racing series as alongside doing a few stints in F1. He's done, I know he's done Brazilian stock car. He's possibly done IndyCar, I think. He's been all over
One of the Fittipaldis, well, not one, but yeah, one of the newer
the
Fittipaldis has
Canada.
been in there at some point. Yeah, I can't remember which one. They seem to be taking the Lawrence Stroll approach, Cadillac, of let's throw some money at this and let's see what we can do out of it. And like you say, whole range of drivers with a lot of diverse backgrounds, racing series wise, and it's got to be just for development purposes because you're not putting Fittipaldi or Pagenaud in an F1 car anytime soon, other than for maybe testing purposes. I think that'll be the interesting thing to see them how they hit the ground next season, because if it's a kind of a good first few races and then drop off, or if it's okay, we were even further behind than we thought, or it's respectable, but we don't know what that also looks like, because essentially if you get past Alpine, probably fine. But if you get any further than that, then you actually start to impress us.
Now, I think it's interesting that they've taken Pietro. You know, he's 29. He'll be 30 next year. So they're taking that kind of older driver stance, which is I'm a big stickler for pushing new talent into the sport. I can't help it. So interesting to see that they've kind of kept that bit more experience in their first season, keeping those two in it. But yeah, Fittipaldi was in IMSA and things like that, and did the European Le Mans series as well. So he's got a lot of
You
experience in
do have
his
the
bag.
benefit with someone like Fittipaldi, as well, you're saying about the experience of wanting to promote in terms of you can say that he can say rather that he's part of it. They offer him a seat or a partnership somewhere else because they know that once they get rid of Bottas and Perez, they're probably going to then go down your route of newer talent because we've done all the donkey work. So there's no real threat of him going, "When are you putting me in the car, guys?" And like, "You're not getting in the car."
Yeah. A seat reserved for Jack Crawford as they try and fill out sort of an American driver series. Yeah, the Cadillac one's interesting. One interesting point on this is we've seen footage of Checo in the sim at Cadillac's HQ recently, and I think they forgot to review the footage before they posted it online because the moment that they did start recording was Checo in the wall at, I think it was turn three at Spain. So, but interestingly, we've not
Plans for next year.
Yeah, interesting. We've not seen Bottas doing any of this yet. And that is despite the fact that he is just a reserve driver at Mercedes and essentially just there to make TikToks. Mercedes have not released him to do any pre-season work with Cadillac, and they are unlikely to until.
Well, considering what they did with Lewis at the end of last year, you're not going to start doing that for Bottas now, are you?
With Bottas, I think it's a bit different. He is your test and reserve driver, he's your
Yeah,
guy.
but if you can prevent your competition, no matter how new, from having any kind of edge, you're going to do it.
Yeah, it shows obviously Mercedes sort of playing all sides of the court, but at the same time, it's just a guy who makes your TikToks. I'm sure you can let him go and do a bit of sim work at
Well,
Cadillac.
they can, but it's the
They
fact that
want
they
to, yeah.
are deciding we're not going to, and what that says about us, that is what the real message is there, rather than, yeah, we're not going to do it out of the goodness of our hearts.
Yeah. With the news out of the way, we'll jump into some Singapore Grand Prix fun facts. And Antonio Giovinazzi has still led more laps of the Singapore Grand Prix than Max Verstappen. Go on, my sweet curly-haired man. So, Sebastian Vettel, Lewis Hamilton, and Bert Mailander hold the top three places when it comes to laps led at the Singapore Grand Prix. Such is the impact of the safety car when we go racing here. In fact, it is the only Grand Prix on the calendar that Max Verstappen hasn't won at. So, this is very much his joke around. Maybe we'll see him go 3 for 3. Who knows? That's what our predictions are for. In other news, Pirelli aren't bringing anything new this year when it comes to tyres, C3, C4, and C5s, the hards, mediums, and soft compounds, the same as last year. Although only 9% of the laps were run on the soft tyres, so it's very much a medium hard race with a single stop somewhere in the middle. Unless you're Daniel Ricciardo, in which case you box late on, put on the softs, and go for the fastest lap, a record which is still held. We'll wait and see if that's broken this year.
So it's
Timo.
still held mainly because we've not been back since.
Yeah, I did realize that sort of point as I said the sentence, but you've got a fun fact.
Well, yeah, because you're probably thinking history-wise, what the hell can he say? We've watched all of the Grand Prix. However, before the Singapore Grand Prix, as we know it, there was another held at the Thompson Road Circuit north of the city. It was known as the Malaysian Grand Prix because it was held at a time before Singapore was actually Singapore and had gained independence in 1965. So it ran on for a bit, but after 1973, the venue was considered too dangerous for reasons which probably involved people dying. And the final race of that era was won by a chap called Vern Schuppen in a March F2 car. So there's something for a pub quiz that I will definitely use against you one day, Jesse. In other kind of related fun facts, can either of you two name all of the different Grand Prix winners that we've had at modern Singapore since we came here for the first time and the first official night race?
Ooh.
Obviously, you're saying Vettel was the most successful, but he's not the only driver to have won here.
Ooh. Carlos.
Think a lot too. Lando won last year. And
You got
then Carlos.
one, two,
Alonso,
Who's playing?
famously.
Three. You've got four more to get.
Lewis
Carlos.
has almost certainly won it.
Yes, he has.
I don't feel like Bottas has possibly won it.
Your feeling would be incorrect.
Rosberg?
Correct. Two more. You named one earlier.
Vettel?
There we go. And
No, Seb won it for Ferrari. Charles didn't win it that year.
this is all you, Jesse. I'm racking my brain here.
It's not that difficult.
Danny Rick?
You'll kick yourself.
I'm
Oh,
not.
don't say that.
Hold on a second. Let me think. Let me think. Let me think.
You can kick each other for all I care, but you know. Either way, someone's getting hurt. It's probably both of you.
Oh, fuck it. Streak circuit specialist, Sergio Perez. Yeah, of course, he did
There
it.
we go.
2020
There
years?
is.
No, 21. It would
20.
have been
Yeah.
turned. 22.
22.
Oh.
There we go. So Perez catches you out.
Yeah, he's one of those ones that always does because you're like, oh, I forgot he was in a really good car for a period of time and sort of racked up a surprising amount of wins.
This is what I was. I would never have thought of him because of all I remember him is his unfortunate few years in Red Bull.
Yeah, they were polarizing
That
that.
was with Red Bull, though, annoyingly for you.
Yeah. At a time when they had a good car.
Oh,
Anyway,
yeah.
we move on from the fun facts into the predictions, and we start with the pole position predictions. Please, Timo, we'll start with you.
I've gone for the same as I guess. I'm going to steal me a thunder here, I'm afraid, Leah, and go Lando Norris. I don't have him doing well for the rest of the weekend, so I thought I'd give him something to do on Saturday.
Yeah, my prediction was the exact same as Timo. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like after Baku, we're going to get a masterclass again in Singapore. And spoiler alert, because we're going to go on set, but I do think he'll win it as well. I'm being very optimistic for McLaren in general this weekend. Maybe it's a bit more hopeful than necessarily anything else. But yeah, no, I think Lando will definitely get pole.
As Ferrari's proven, hope is an excellent strategy and you should back it every time. So good on you.
There we go.
It's a better strategy to put Esteban Ocon on hards on lap three and leave him be. I think George Russell's going to get it onto pole position. He's a dab hand round here to a very certain extent, 99%
Was going to say, to a point.
of the time. But again, it's not a circuit that sort of shows up the flaws in this year's Mercedes. It's a car that sort of responds well in those low speed at corners. George really likes a car, a sort of circuit he can properly tip it into and sort of has to finesse getting the exit out of. And he had a good turn of pace when we're sort of going through Baku. The Mercedes really warms up to this circuit. So if he gets a good run all the way through Q3, Q1, Q2, and into Q3 to get a feel of the car and get the track rubbered in, we could see something very impressive indeed. And especially because it's warmer. The Mercedes does look after its tyres quite well, so it will be able to really switch them on without baking them to pieces by the end of a lap. Other cars might suffer, think Ferrari in that case. When
That
it
goes against my complete prediction, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, Timo, with that heat in mind, because bear in mind there is a heat warning in place for Singapore this weekend. All the teams will be have been given extra weight loads to account for cooling systems. They've got the new water cooling vests. With that in mind, with the fact that this is going to really push the tires to a level of degradation we might not have seen this year, let's say, and the fact that Ferraris seem to struggle when it comes to that, especially because they have to run the higher tire pressures to get the higher sidewall to keep the car off the ground, you still think this is going to be your winner?
Yeah, because there's also more of a potential threat of rain than we're used to seeing as we get close to the weekend. So I'm hoping that might play into it. Because let's face it, Baku, it all happened on Saturday. We got let down big time on Sunday in terms of an actual race. It was nice to see the podium we got, but it didn't feel like we'd earned it on the Sunday. We'd already got it all on the Saturday. I'd like us to have a bit of an actual crazy race. And when it comes to Singapore, last year did let us down. So I'm thinking maybe we get something akin to 2023, where it's a bit of a close hunt throughout, and there's always that potential for jeopardy that we kind of had in Monaco last year, where, okay, there wasn't much in the way of action, but you were on the edge of your seat the whole time because you dared not think that Leclerc could get there because it was Leclerc and he didn't have a good track record in Monaco up to that point. So think we get Hamilton, Russell, and Verstappen as the top three, but they're not separated by a hell of a lot. And it's going to be very much those last 15 laps of 23 sort of situation of can anyone do anything about this, or is this what we're getting?
Yeah, can they hold them off to the end? Leah, you said you were feeling a bit more optimistic for McLaren this weekend. I think that reflects in the way you've appointed your podium.
I'm feeling a bit more optimistic for them this weekend. I really hope they can make a comeback from Baku in the way they have done all season. So yeah, as you said, I've gone Lando for the win again, hoping he can replicate something similar last year. And then if we do get a potential of rain, obviously, apart from maybe qualifying in Baku, he has done very well in the wet races. Obviously, in Australia, he did very well. I think there was a stat, I'm not sure when it was last updated, so this is, could be very outdated, but the first three wet races of the season, I think he won or something around those lines. He did very well in. And then I'm going Oscar P2. I think it'll be similar to this for the rest of the season. I think it'll be flitting between these two now. And then I have gone Max P3. I don't think we can rule him out. I don't think the Ferraris will be up there. I think they need to sort themselves out a little bit more. I don't think they'll have that. They'll definitely get the points and things. But I think Mercedes will finish ahead of them. But generally, yeah, I think it'll be another McLaren masterclass, or maybe that's what I'm hoping for.
It's going to be an interesting one. I've gone a bit counter to many of these things. I
As
think,
usual.
as usual, I think we're going to see a Piastri win, Russell second. And I think Alex Albon, fired up off the back of seeing that you can drag that Williams onto the podium, will produce something
I don't
quite.
think he ever doubted it. It was just it happened on an unfortunate weekend for him.
Yeah, I think this weekend, what he sort of considers to be pretty much his home Grand Prix, huge amount of local support for him. He's got a beautiful special helmet that he's auctioning off to raise money for charity afterwards. It's going to be a good one for Alex. I think we might see that reflected in a podium. If we get a season with two Williams podiums in, it's going to be incredible.
Especially back to back.
Especially back to back, the Williams hat that hangs off my chain with two former champions in sort of signatures on it will shine brightly as they find something exciting and we see Williams back on top. Meanwhile, when it comes to fastest laps, we've all gone in three very different directions. Timo, again, much like your winner, I'm thinking you might have been a bit optimistic.
Well, I feel like this is probably one of the few opportunities I'm going to get to do this kind of left field thinking, and to give you an opportunity to catch up in the points, because the rest of the races this season, I think, are probably going to be more straightforward and or less potential for chaos that we've seen traditionally outside of Brazil. And I want to give Charles Leclerc something to do, so I think he gets the fastest lap as he hunts down Verstappen for P3 in somewhat cleaner air.
No, it's a fair answer. We'll see what he can do. Leah, you've sort of tied yours in with your podium predictions.
Yeah, I'm keeping consistent. Because that's all I can really see for this weekend. I do hope we get another race like 23, but can I necessarily see it massively? I'm not sure. I will pray for it though. But yeah, I've gone with Oscar for the fastest lap. I think that, especially after his showing at Baku, he might come out with a bit more, not vengeance, that's not the right word, because he hasn't got anything to avenge on people, but more of a, not a point to
Vengeance
prove.
on himself.
Exactly. I think that's the one. I think he wants to go out there and prove to everyone exactly why he's in the championship. You know, we saw that like weird scenario happen in the first five corners in Baku. So he'll come out wanting to prove himself again. I think that'll prove him. He might not win it. I didn't predict him to win it, but I think it will definitely prove himself in the fastest lap. Not that he gets a point for anymore, but I think that will go to him.
We still award points for fastest lap, and that's the important point. Kimi Antonelli is my prediction when it comes to fastest lap. I think, again, we're going to see the Mercedes in a happy operating window here. And I think if he's got a bit of free air, if he's sort of somewhere around that sort of P5, P6 with a bit of space around him, we could see Antonelli at some point when the fuel loads have dropped down, when he makes that pit stop, extract a sort of fastest lap, especially if he sort of goes on the counter strategy, starts on the hards, goes a bit long to overcut a few people, and then swaps to the mediums. There might be something in that Mercedes at that point in time that just sort of falls his way. But again, possibly overthinking this quite logically, we're possibly going to see safety car pit stops because this is, after all, Singapore. So before we get to our wild predictions, do we think we're going to see a safety car?
Yeah,
Need
absolutely.
one for my wild prediction.
Yeah. Well, they might mechanical failure and limp it to the pits, but more than
No, not with my thinking.
likely. Yeah. Are you thinking very much of Verstappen hits both Ferraris off the start, sort of DNF?
Was thinking 2017, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, all three of us then we are quorating the idea that there will be a safety car. So, wild predictions. Timo, gone.
Not
We've
saying Verstappen's doing this. Crucially, Verstappen isn't doing this one because it would help
been
with
P3.
everything overall. Because I think we get double McLaren DNF. Doesn't have to be first lap, first corner shenanigans, but it could be. I'm not going to rule that out. As long as it happens, I get a point. I don't mind. I just think it'd be better if Max didn't cause it and he does get the P3 or wherever, as I've predicted, because it would then spice things up even further for the championship and it rolls on a bit longer and he's just ominously there in the background and two McLarens are going, oh shit, we've got to really keep an eye on him now.
Mathematically, you can't rule him out. And I think in a press conference earlier today, they did ask, sort of, I think they said that they asked the sort of assembled driver, sort of, what are Max's odds for potentially winning the championship? And George Russell went 100% while deadpanning Lando Norris, which I thought was such a targeted and funny move.
If he managed it, it would be not his best championship because no one, including himself, would have thought he could do that at the start of the year. And you've got to think with how McLaren have been, you'd go, how the hell have you managed to do that? It'd be incredibly impressive on both sides for very different reasons.
It wouldn't be him winning a championship, it'd be McLaren throwing away a championship at that point in time, which I think is the important distinction.
The driver's definitely throwing
Yeah.
it away. Depending on how they went about losing it.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see. Leah, you've got a wild prediction that's got some science behind it, and this appeals to me.
Oh, wow. Maybe not as wild, perhaps as like a double McLaren DNF, but I do think off the back of his podium last time out, I do think Carlos Sainz will be in the points, maybe even a top. Oh, no, do I want to say top five? Yeah, go on, let's do it. I want to say a top five. He has been pretty good in recent years, apart from last year when he finished seventh. He obviously won that really tight race in 23 and then got on the podium in 22. I'd like to think that he's proven to himself a little bit now that that car can perform how Alex knew it could perform. So hopefully off the back of that and with the confidence he can have in himself and in the car, and he always had it in the team anyway, we know that. But I think he can perform very well here again, and I also hope for my Williams heart that he will. So yeah, Carlos Sainz in the points, maybe even a top five for him.
That would be very exciting indeed. And I think it's going to shake up his season if he gets another big points haul off the back of it. And I think, again, he's shaken the demons of what he couldn't was concerned that that car could and couldn't do with that sort of podium finish, and proven to himself that he's capable, the car's capable, the team are certainly behind him when he does it as well. So it's sort of it's what he needed to rebuild going into this. So hopefully he'll follow on with that positive spirit. Meanwhile, completely wild from me.
Watch signs cause that double McLaren DNF next time.
No, don't do it.
But what the two McLarens being wiped out of the race would do is free up space for a double Haas top seven, and that would be, yeah, everyone likes that. Yeah,
I
begrudgingly,
like
everyone.
how you've said top seven, but don't guarantee them a podium.
I'm not going to guarantee them a podium. I think
No,
that's
just because of the stat you were saying earlier about Haas being the only team to not get on the podium in this era, and they're running out of races to do so, and it would just be funny for them to both get in the top seven, which oddly specific of you, but for that not to then be a podium, so then four, five, six, or seven.
So the podium is still available for them if they would like it. However, I'm thinking they finally get their podium at one of the races in America. So we've still got COTA, we've still got Vegas, we've still got an opportunity for them to do that with the stars and stripes flying overhead. So
Now they're going to do a Sonny Hayes and do an Abu Dhabi and win.
we'll wait and see. But that rounds out our wild predictions for what has been a surprisingly meaty preview to the Singapore Grand Prix. That's all we've got time for on this episode, and we'll be back next week for a review of the Singapore Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Timo, where can you be found?
An interview at the moment over on Instagram with Nina Spitaler, and I've got an podcast episode out over on YouTube and Spotify, which is an IndyCar 2025 season review, which amusingly is shorter than most of our episodes reviewing said races from the 2025 season. It's just how that happens.
Nice and quick fire. Leah, in the meantime, if people would like more content from your good self, especially with BSB starting to wrap up for the season, where can they find you to get all the news going into the final two rounds?
Yeah, my main outlets are the classic Instagram, TikTok, all on there at Motorsport Leah. That's me. I'll also be obviously on the ground at all the races, and I think I can say, but I'm gonna be working with Motorcycle Live if anyone wants to do their MCL. So keep an eye out for me there as well.
Ooh, very jazzy indeed. That is exciting news. And if you want more from me, you can find me across the internet on all the social media platforms as at Jesse on Cars. And of course, you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. There's a new issue that came out yesterday. I can't remember what's in it. I didn't do the press release for it because I was on holiday. And of course, there'll be an episode of the Classic Car Weekly podcast that we'll try and record tomorrow and get out because we're multimedia these days. Otherwise, I'll be at Silverstone for the Keep Super Sprint on Saturday as well. So a good bit of classic racing there. Otherwise, have a very good Singapore Grand Prix, and we'll be back with a review sometime early next week.